Well, hey, everybody, welcome to episode 62 of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. As always, it's brought to you by our good friends at the Ankeny office of Iowa Realty. They are located at 1802 Southeast Delaware, suite number 103. Iowa Realty is the proud sponsor of Ankeny Fanatic. They have 75 agents specializing in residential, commercial, farm, and land properties. We're going to talk a lot of girls cross country today with both the Ankeny and Centennial coaches. We'll also have a special guest at the end of the podcast. But right now, I want to bring in my first guest. He is the head coach of the Ankeny girls team. On August 27th, he guided the Hawkettes to a fourth-place finish at the season-opening Ankeny Centennial Early Bird Meet at DMAC. He is Eric Klingensmith. Eric, thanks for coming in. How are you doing?
Good. I'm fine. Thanks, Dan.
Hey, you bet. Well, you guys are only one meet into the season, obviously, but are you happy with the progress that your team has made?
Yeah, we even compared times to last year's races for the girls, and they've significantly increased in their speed and endurance and just in their overall aggressiveness racing. So we were extremely proud of them and can't wait for them all to race together tomorrow at Ames.
Well, the Centennial meet last week consisted of two separate races, a freshman-sophomore race and a junior-senior race. You guys were certainly consistent. You placed fourth in both divisions as well as overall. Your top finisher on the night was junior Madeline Murphy. She placed 18th overall in 20 minutes and 32 seconds. Now, Madeline was your top finisher at 7 of the 9 meets last year, so I'm sure you're counting on her to have a big year, aren't you?
I am. She is coming to us from softball all summer, and so always a little worried about how much endurance she has, but she's always given us, you know, all she's got, and she's just a great overall athlete.
Well, she told me after the race that she kind of had to scramble to get into shape, you know, but she must have been able to catch up pretty quick.
She was. She was able to get into rhythm quickly, and the workouts this year are pushing the girls even more than they have in the past. That's what they asked for, so we're just trying to make sure that they keep pushing themselves as well.
Now, last year, Madeline often ran alongside teammate Fiona Reardon, who was your top finisher at the other two meets. And I noticed that Fiona was out watching the races last week, but she's obviously out with an injury. How long do you expect her to be out?
We're holding her out again this week. So probably trying to get her to come back in for Marshalltown, or maybe just hold her out until the meet after that, just to see if she's totally back together again with her injury. So she's just taking it easy right now. We don't want her to push it too hard so that we don't have her for the rest of the season. I don't want her to be her season to be over with on our senior year before it has to be.
Sure. We had some other upperclassmen among your top seven last week. Marika Kisgen, Megan Bosch, and Lauren Clark. Those girls also have some varsity experience from last year, so I'm sure you feel that, you know, that will be beneficial for them this season.
Yeah, Megan's very consistent. She runs just a smart race every time. She gets out there, and she looks like she's not going quite as fast as the rest of the girls, but she always catches up, and she hits her targets and passes girls when she needs to pass them. And Lauren did phenomenal this year in this first race. Last year, she was disappointed in this race, and this year, coming back, and I think she ran 21-21 in this one. That's way quicker than she finished some of her races last year. So we're excited to see how she progresses, too. But Megan's, again, she's a solid runner for us.
And you did have some younger girls step up for you at the first meet as well. Freshman Jenna Pitts placed fourth in the 9-10 race and was 20th overall in 20:36. Maddie Walsh and Talia Dosh were also among your top seven. You know, you have to be excited by the performance of those younger girls.
Yeah, Maddie and Jenna both, as freshmen, coming up into that lineup it's exciting for us. And they both raced very smart races. Maddie Walsh, she was a little disappointed in her race, but I think that she's going to race a little smarter this next time. And Jenna, she raced an excellent race, just a smart race. She again, kind of like Megan Bosch, where they start out a little slower and they just pick off runners throughout the entire race. So it's really just awesome to see them work.
Well, it looks like your team has some pretty good depth because three of your upperclassmen who have some varsity experience, Sierra Fillinger, Ava Vandermortel, and Liddy Hill, weren't even among your top seven. There's going to be some pretty good competition for those varsity spots, isn't there?
I believe so. I think we're going to be doing a lot of changing in and out with those varsity positions this season, which is a great problem to have. I absolutely love having the girls move in and out, varsity and JV, getting some of the JV girls experience and some of those younger underclassmen stepping up and pushing the upperclassmen to want to finish their season strong and on top.
All right, you're listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Iowa Realty. Gershman Mortgage is also a sponsor of the podcast. Gershman, the Midwest's premier mortgage lender, is proud to be part of the Ankeny Fanatic Podcast. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home, vacation home, upgrade, or remodel an existing home, or refinance your current mortgage, Gershman Mortgage is here to help. With over 60 years in the mortgage industry, they have security, experience, and unmatched service. You can visit their Ankeny office, call 515-964-5952, or visit gershman.com to get pre-approved today. We're visiting with Ankeny Girls Cross Country coach Eric Clayensmith. Well, let's look ahead now. You guys will be competing in the Ames Invitational at the Iowa State Cross Country Course on Thursday. Will you be seeing a lot of the same teams that you saw last week at the Centennial Meet?
There will be quite a few of the same teams there. I think we actually get to see Marshalltown this time. We'll get to see Cedar Falls this time. So we'll get to see some of the other teams that are out there, too, that will be racing later on in the season, too. We'll have a rematch against Centennial and Valley. And, of course, Waukee will be there, too, and Ames as well. Ames has got a really good top runner, so our girls are looking forward to kind of just getting in there and competing with some of these top teams in the state, too.
Now, do you have any specific goals for this meet, or do you just want to see some improvement?
We want to see some improvement, but we also know that this is a really tough course to race at just because of the hills in the backside of it. The girls know that going into it, but we've been working more hill work this year, and even though the girls say they don't like it, Fiona was one that spoke up even yesterday after we did a hill workout, and she said, man, I miss not being able to do this, and I never thought I'd say that. So they're really excited about what they're going to do in this race, and they're pumped up because they want to get back into the rankings. We've been sitting there on the cusp, and they think that they deserve to be in it. So we're going to try to get them up there and get them to compete in this race as well.
Sure. Now, I used to be a runner in my younger days, so I'm kind of curious about your workout routine. Now, most of your meets are on Thursdays, so do you guys like train hard on Mondays and Tuesdays and then kind of go easy on Wednesdays, or is that just oversimplifying things?
So we make it as simple as possible. We like to have the workouts to where we usually do maintenance recovery type runs on Mondays and Fridays, and then Tuesdays and Thursdays are our hard days, where Wednesday's the pre-meet day, so really go hard on Tuesdays. Mondays is usually, like I said, a maintenance run or maybe even a tempo pace, and then Fridays is a recovery run. So we push the Monday, Tuesday pretty hard, but I alternate to hills versus track speed workouts on Tuesdays. And the girls seem to enjoy it. They got some of their favorite workouts and some that aren't their favorite ones, but we call those getting better days. And so they're getting better every Tuesday, and they know what to expect coming into it. It's going to be a tough, hard workout, and they see the results of it in the meets.
Well, I suppose you have to practice certain things too, like, you know, you have to practice starts or maybe like finishes, things like that too, don't you?
Yeah, we do. We always start out with or end some practices with some striders, as if we're going to end the meet that way. And sometimes we get out with some striders too. So getting those striders in there and getting the 200 repeats in there, just to get them out in the beginning, and then also just kicking it in at the end of a race, that helps too.
Now, looking at your schedule the rest of this month, you guys will run at Marshalltown, Cedar Falls, and Newton before traveling to the University of Kansas on September 28th to run at the Rimrock Farm Classic. And that's obviously a really competitive meet. You know, but it's got to be a good team bonding experience for you as well, isn't it, because of how much time the girls get to spend together that weekend?
Oh, it is. It's a great time. The girls absolutely love it, going down to Lawrence and, you know, going out to eat. And then I think last year we just went and walked around in the downtown area, and they did some shopping. My wife's a huge KU fan, so I get to go down there and get her some KU stuff. So
yeah.
It's kind of nice to be able to do that. But the girls really get together, and big-time bonding experience for the top 16 girls. They get to go down there with us, and it's nice to see them. And they love that course. Like, they look forward to that, and they compete. A lot of times these girls are competing just to get into the Rimrock race rather than getting into the state meet or running at districts. They want to go to Rimrock more than anything else.
And sure.
It's a good trip.
Well, looking at the big picture, I know your team's primary goal is to qualify for the state meet, which would be the first time since 2016. Your squad has placed fourth at the regional meet in each of the last 2 years, you know, just falling just short of the state meet. You know, what's it going to take for your girls to accomplish that goal?
I think one thing that we kind of talked about, too, is just getting into the rankings so that it makes it not quite as tough on us to get into a regional meet so that we can qualify. We're still going to have to battle it out, I think. But looking at the bottom five teams in the state rankings, I think they were in competition with all those teams. And I think that the girls even think that, too, that we're able to get out there and we're able to compete and able to really push the envelope there. And they want to get that ranking set and established and keep it the rest of the season so that we can have a little bit better shot at getting the whole team back to state.
Yeah, because when they do set up those, you know, regional pairings, they do try to split up, you know, the teams that are ranked, right? So
yeah,
they have the best shot to qualify.
Which is what happened to us the last few years, is we've been that fourth team that if we have a little bit of a shot sometimes, and sometimes they set up with those teams that are stacked and there's just no way to get around them. You're going to get fourth no matter what. So it's hopefully this year, like I said, we'll get into the rankings and sit there and stay there and work our way up a little bit, and it'll be more manageable for us, and the goal will be a success for us.
Well, the CIML is, again, loaded with some quality teams, and you'll probably be seeing some of those at the regional meet. You hope maybe just one or two of them and not, you know, three or four.
Mm-hmm.
But Johnston, Southeast Polk, and Waukee are currently the top three teams in Class 4A. You know, so you guys are going to be tested, you know, each and every week, aren't you?
Exactly. I think almost every week we have one of those teams that we're going up against in a meet here or there. We go to Southeast Polk later on in the season, and we'll see Southeast Polk there. We don't usually see them too much before then. Even the Marshalltown meet is usually a pretty stacked meet with a lot of the top teams in the state coming to that that meet, and you get to see almost a pre-state meet there with a lot of the top-ranked teams there, so we kind of get to see where we stand there as well.
We got a chance to see Johnston last week, and the Dragons easily won the Centennial meet with 22 points. Now, Johnston was the state champion in both 2016 and 17 before finishing 1 point behind Southeast Polk at last year's meet, so I'm sure the Dragons are very motivated to get back on top. You know, from what you saw last week, you know, do they look like the team to beat in Class 4A?
I do. I think that they are the team to beat because looking at the times of their top three runners and then even the spread after that, there's not much room to slip in between them and do well. If you've got two girls that are really, really running great and they're running in the 18s and 19s, they're going to be up there with in the middle of the top two or three girls with them, but then everybody else kind of seems to drop off, and they seem like they stick together fairly decently. Even looking at the spread of that last meet, I think they were only they had a minute and something spread on theirs. But I did like to give our girls a shout-out because our top seven had a 46-second spread between those seven girls, which when I was looking at a lot of the numbers out there, that's like the closest grouping of girls throughout the state in the races last week, which was awesome. We can get them run a little bit faster, we'll be able to compete a little bit higher. But Johnston, they're always tough. So we want to try to get to that level if we
sure.
can and push it. So,
well, when your girls do run that close of times together, can you have them run as a pack then? I know that's sometimes a strategy, isn't it?
We do. We and that's one of the things we talked about this season is getting the girls together more as a pack and running together. And they started doing that at the end of last season and buying into it, and it seemed to work really well for them there. So we're going to see in these next couple of races if we can keep that pack together and then for at least the first couple of miles and then kind of a free-for-all after that and see what everybody's got left in the tank for that last mile.
All right, Eric, well, thanks a lot for coming in tonight. Good luck tomorrow night, and I'll probably see you up there.
All right, thanks a lot.
You bet. All right, you're listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Ira Realty. Revive Clinic and Spa is also a sponsor of the podcast. Revive has a large menu of aesthetic procedures, including Botox, cosmetic fillers, hydrofacials, cool sculpting, laser hair removal, forever young photo facials, halo, and a medically supervised weight loss program. Dr. Steph is now offering hormone pellet therapy for men and women. She has over 15 years of aesthetic experience and 30 years in the healthcare field. Her staff is top-notch and the best in the industry. They give every new patient a complimentary consult that includes a Visia skin analysis valued at $200. Revive Clinic and Spa is conveniently located at 1850 Southwest Plaza Shops Lane in South Ankeny by the new Hy-Vee. You can give them a call at 515-965-5677. All right, my next guest is the head coach of the 7th-ranked Ankeny Centennial girls team. He has guided the Jaguars to the state meet in all 6 years that the program has existed, and last week his team opened the season with a second-place finish at the Centennial Invitational. He is Eric Cogdell. Eric, thanks for coming in. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Hey, you bet. Well, you guys got off to a strong start last week with the runner-up finish behind number one Johnston. Overall, were you happy with the way that your team performed?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, historically, we've struggled at this meet a little bit. Just our initial training block has us pretty fatigued, and maybe we were back in a routine. We actually had school this year. In past years, it's been before school actually started. And so maybe that helped us a little bit, that we were in school day and back in routine, but we were really led very well by our juniors and seniors who had an outstanding day, pretty much top to bottom in that crew. And then our freshmen, first race out there, they ran like it was their first race out there. And so we look to see them improve quite a bit this next week, and they'll actually add to our squad depth once they get going.
Well, your top finisher was junior Catherine Verthurms. She placed 6th overall in a time of 19:28. Now, she went out and took the early lead in the 11-12 race before Johnston Pack eventually passed her. You know, did she go out a little faster than maybe you would have liked?
No, actually, we're trying to get out a little harder this year, so we're ready and accustomed to that state meet pace. We've typically tried to run a very even-paced race, which helps us in the interim and the short-term results. But when we get to the state meet, we're just not ready for that next level, that first go out and go and actually hurting mid-race. And so we're trying a little bit differently this year to get out a little quicker and suffer a little bit, I suppose. But by the time we get to November 2nd, hopefully we're there, and I think we will be. By the time we get there, we'll be so accustomed to it, it'll seem like an old hat, and they're ready to go.
All right, and then Morgan Graybill and Sophie Lee were your next two finishers, placing 10th and 11th overall, respectively. Those two runners, along with Catherine, are all ranked individually in Class 4A. Verthurms is ranked 17th, Graybill is 28th, and Lee is 29th. You have to feel pretty good about having, three of the top 30 runners in the state.
Yeah, it's it's early, so we have to kind of temper that a little bit. There are some schools who haven't raced, and so those who haven't raced aren't even eligible for the rankings right now, the way that they're doing things, which is questionable at times. But for them, they went out, they ran outstanding races. Sophie has been ranked since her freshman year, in and out here and there, and so she looked fantastic. Morgan is showing that the girl we saw last spring in the track, you know, she just missed Drake Relays in the 3000, and she's the girl that we always thought we had as a freshman, and she's really running well, and she's got her strength going, and confidence is all there, and so she enters the rankings for the first time ever. And with Catherine, she ended last season ranked for the first time ever. So it's nice to see those girls get the acknowledgement for the hard work that they have been putting in.
Well, I know you told me before the season that you didn't think you were going to have a clear-cut number one runner. Do you still feel like that's going to be the case?
I do. Yep, absolutely. So with those three right there kind of mixing it up, you know, Sophie was a little bit of a surprise. She hasn't been training with Catherine or Morgan, and so she really did put in a nice race. And then Rondi Kwas, who was our top finisher in that 9-10 race, she really ran a pretty uneven race. And she's going to be right there tomorrow running with Morgan and Catherine and Sophie. And then there's not too far of a gap back, and we're talking about Kirsten Fritz and Jeannie Peters and Jennifer Jordan.
Yeah, those three girls that you just mentioned there were also part of your top seven last week, along with Rondi. Now, Rondi was the only underclassman who placed among your top seven. The freshman, she placed seventh in the 9-10 race and was 26th overall. And she's really been a little bit of a surprise, hasn't she? Because she didn't run eighth grade cross country last year, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So Rondi comes to us just kind of fresh and unknown. She does some power lifting, which is a neat little component. She's very durable. And then she's playing club soccer this fall, and she was a club soccer kid last fall as well. And she ran some track with us in the spring on the eighth grade team, and she was part of that eighth grade group that won the Drake Relays Distance Medley. So she's had some successes running, and her dad was a collegiate runner, and we hope to see her continue to improve.
Well, you guys really have a deep team. Juniors Katie Jensen and Grace Mader are all, among seven returnees with state meet experience. Kendall Jorgensen and Macy Langstrad are two other runners with some varsity experience. You know, so I'm guessing we could see a lot of changes in your varsity lineup throughout the season, couldn't we?
Yeah, you know, we're going to see girls in and out. And a lot of the meets nowadays, they're starting to let teams run 10 to help develop that experience. That was something we've always done, was rotate kids, because we want to keep them engaged and having that opportunity so that way they're ready to go when we need to call upon someone. And now it just seems like it's become that's what everybody's doing. So we did that for years. So yeah, Kendall will be right there. And then as you mentioned, Grace and Katie, they both have ran at the state meet. And Katie was a medalist at the state qualifier last year, so she's going to be in the mix at some point. And then Macy Langstrat too, absolutely. And we've got a couple more freshmen that are knocking on the door, and a junior who we get her completely healthy, she'll be right there too.
I was just going to ask you about those other freshmen. We talked about Rondi, but some of those other freshmen were part of that team that placed third last year at the middle school state meet. So, yeah, those girls could certainly battle for varsity positions as well, I would think.
Yeah, so we ended up not getting all of our girls out from that squad. We've got some rush soccer conflicts, and so we lost a couple that way. But we've got Maddie Lavoie and Ava Birchmeyer and Cam Hirschberger, and all three of those were top 20 at that state meet for eighth graders.
All right. Now you guys will be competing in the Ames Invitational on Thursday. You know, do you have any specific goals for that meet, or do you just want to see some improvement?
Yeah, we really just want to see some improvement. We want to see that pack now run together at that varsity level once we bring in Rondi, have her be able to get through that whole race with a little more evenness, and just having that camaraderie around her is going to help her a lot. We'd like to be real close to Waukee. I think there's a chance that we could go out in front of Waukee. They've got, I think, four really good runners, and I think we've got four really good runners, and I think we've got four to eight more really close runners that are going to be able to put a gap. And if we can slide those girls in front of Waukee's fifth, all of a sudden we get a little help maybe from Valley's number one or number two runner. We could upset them a little bit. And I expect to see Valley also be a much improved squad. They were third at state last year. They did graduate three seniors, but we didn't see a lot of their girls that ran at the state meet a year ago last week. So
right.
They're somewhere, and I imagine they're playing the long game, which is important for their squad and how they operate.
Sure. Well, obviously one of your team's goals is to get back to the state meet. I'm sure you guys would like to improve on last year's 15th place finish, and you're currently ranked 7th. Now, I don't know, maybe some teams aren't quite ranked yet if they haven't ran yet, but your team's highest finish in program history was an 8th place finish in 2016. Do you think this team might be capable of, you know, topping that effort?
Yeah, we've talked about that. Not a lot, but – With our three out front, it takes three good girls to qualify for the state meet, and we've got six different girls who have been state qualifying meet medalists. So we've got that group where we will have a really good shot to qualify. And then if you can get three girls under 20 minutes, and I feel like we have three girls under 20 minutes, now you're a top 10 squad. And if we can get everybody else there healthy and you put five girls under 20 minutes, now you're a top five squad. And I think we have those five girls. We have to get them to the finish line healthy and focused and cohesive and all those other little pieces that come with team building. And right now we've got the girls in the room that are building the team in the way we want to see it built. They're doing outstanding.
What would you say is going to be the key for this team to reach that potential? Is staying healthy the biggest component?
I think with cross country, that is one of the biggest components. The girls are going to continue to grow as racers and understand how to get the most out of their bodies in those races. I think coming in rested at the right time is another piece of that. And we've kind of taken the foot off the gas a little bit, maybe too much at the end of the season. And so coming in without doing that, I think, will help us to maintain our focus a little more too. I don't think focus is our problem, but I feel like as we've gotten to the very, very end, sometimes we're just kind of tired. It's a long season, and so we need to make sure that those girls are as mentally rested as they are physically. And
sure.
I think we've lost some of that mental part as we've been kind of scrapping and scraping in previous years, and we've had some health issues and bumps and bruises and different things that's kind of put us as on the bubble. And I think they carry that stress more than they need to carry it because they care so darn much.
Well, you know, there are a lot of strong teams in the CIML. You've talked about some of them. You've already seen some of them. You know, from what you saw of Johnston last week, do you think they look like the team to beat in Class 4A?
Johnston's outstanding. It's tough to put a label on anybody just because we saw what happened last year where they were the hands-down favorite all season long and Southeast Polk went ahead and got them. So anyone who's riding off Southeast Polk right now is mistaken. You've got to count on those two. And Waukee is, you know, right there at number three. And I would never write Waukee out of anything either. And then Valley coming back off a third-place finish, not knowing who they all have, but they have an outstanding eighth grader a year ago. And so if she's in the mix, too, to add to, she'll replace Helen Gold, most likely. And she was a top 10 finisher two or three different years. So those four squads for sure are going to be out there and competitive and out front. And Urbandale, Dan Davis always has Urbandale ready to run at the very end of the year. So there's another one. And Dowling, you can never really count Dowling out. I think Dowling's better than what we saw last week. And I think they'll improve a bunch. And I think the Hawkettes will improve too. I mean, we could see eight teams out of the CIML going to the state meet.
Yeah, just so many good teams, aren't there?
Absolutely.
Well, Rick, before I let you go, I wanted to ask about your own running career. I know you've ran some marathons. Are you still running pretty competitively?
You know, it's harder now. I've got kids that are 6, 8, and 10, and so I'm really involved with what they do as much as I can. I lead a Cub Scout pack, and I've got a Cub Scout pack with 70 kids in it.
Wow.
And so I'm keeping up with them, and then just family is more important right now. It really is, and doing the marathon thing, I loved training. I really did. I love feeling my body ache, and I love feeling my lungs burn. But it's such a selfish endeavor because it's so time-consuming. I could run 11 hours a week when I was covering 85 miles. And when it gets all said and done, that's 11 hours away from family, and that's tough. And, you know, probably two-thirds of those hours were on top of whatever I was coaching.
Sure. Well, I assume you were a big runner in high school and college. So where did your love for running begin?
You know, that's kind of a tricky question. I'm not sure where it first started. I tried track in seventh grade. I didn't like it. I think I quit. I didn't go out in eighth grade. I came back out in ninth grade. I tried it again. My brother was a senior. I was unsuccessful again. Didn't really enjoy it. And then my sophomore year, I'm like, well, hurdles hasn't worked. I'm not a sprinter. Let's try distance. And so I ran distance in my first race. I think I placed fourth in the mile. And ran, I think it was 529, 530. And I looked at my coach and I said, hey, I'm going to run this at state someday. And he laughed at me, which is kind of ironic now, because 530 wasn't going to make state. You've got to run
right
in the 430s.
Right.
But I stuck with it and had a teammate that did run state. I had one teammate that was encouraging. And he's like, you know, if you've got this as a goal, you've got to join cross country. So that fall, I joined cross country and played football. and ran the meets. And by the end of the season, I was our number two cross-country runner behind the state qualifier, state medalist, and ran five flat the next year, junior year. So I've cut off half the time I needed to chop away. And senior year, I took off another 30 seconds, and I ran at the state meet.
Well, it's kind of ironic. We're both sitting here in our damn shirts, so we both have ran a little bit. But so, how many marathons have you ran?
You know, I think it's 13 or 14.
Wow,
you lose count after a while. I've done two ultra marathons. One was 6 hours for this distance wins, and I was just barely 21 years old when I ran that. It's called the Equalizer down in Des Moines, and I set a meet record in 2001, and it's not been surpassed yet. I covered 45.2 miles in 6 hours.
Wow.
And
good
then
for you.
About a decade later, I ran a 50-mile race, and I set a goal to run that one under 6 hours, and I ran it in 5:50, which is 6:59 pace per mile.
Well, that's awesome.
And it was the ninth fastest American in the year. So those ended up being some pretty neat experiences, and I've done numerous marathons, not as many as I probably would have liked, but I've done Omaha and Lincoln and Air Force Marathon. I've ran Boston four times just because it seems to be the thing to do. And
sure.
I've served as a pacer at the Des Moines Marathon. And so I kind of lose track because not a lot of them have been super significant. I woke up on Mother's Day one day and signed up for a marathon that morning and ran one.
Oh, wow. Well, I haven't lost count of how many I've done because I just did one and decided that was enough. So
they say nobody ever does two.
Yeah.
You do one and you're good. Or you do one and you keep doing more, but yeah. Nobody ever does two.
I think I'm in that same group there. Well, you mentioned it's hard to keep up with your own running, but I saw you out running earlier today with your team, so that gets you out running a little bit, doesn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. We've got three coaches, and we've got 77 girls, and we mix our coaches up. So today I think I was running with our middle groups, and then yesterday I ran yesterday I covered the weight room supervision and our cross-training group, and then on Monday I was with our top group. And so then Friday, I think I'll be with our back part of our group. And then Saturday, I'll go long run with our top kids.
All right, Eric. Well, thanks for coming in tonight. Appreciate it. And good luck tomorrow. I'll probably see you up there.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You bet. All right, listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Iowa Realty. The Iowa Finance Authority 2019 Mortgage Credit Certificate Program can save Iowa homebuyers up to $2,000 on their federal taxes for the life of the loan for first-time home buyers. This program awards a tax credit valued at 50% of the annual mortgage interest paid and is available annually as long as the home remains the buyer's primary residence. Dave Lewis of Home Services Lending in the Iowa Realty Ankeny office is a participating lender. You can call Dave at 515-321-5913 if you have any questions. He also has a variety of products and can handle all of your loan needs. Well, my final guest today is the newest member of the Ankeny Fanatic team. He's an Iowa State University student, and he was already on the staff at our sister website, Cyclone Fanatic, and we've brought him over this fall to assist with our coverage of high school sports. He'll be focusing mostly on football, but we may ask him to cover a few other things as well. And I thought today would be a good chance to introduce him to our audience. And we also wanted to break down Friday night's thrilling Jag Hawk Bowl. So let's welcome him to the podcast. He's Connor Ferguson. Connor, thanks for coming in. How you doing?
Fantastic. It's great to be here, Ankeny and all that. And had an exciting first game on staff here.
We sure did, didn't we? Well, but before we talk some football, you know, let's tell our audience a little bit about you. Where did you grow up, and how did you get into this business? What sparked your interest in sports writing?
Oh, man. So I'm graduated from Valley. I'm from West Des Moines, lived there my whole life. Basically, when I was a kid, I didn't know people got paid to write in the newspapers, but I really liked reading them. So I'd, like, instead of reading books in elementary school, I'd read sports sections. Every day I'd just bring the sports section from that day and look at the pictures and stuff and the design. So I love editing things, writing, all that stuff, and I guess I was naturally good at it, and when I was a freshman in high school, I wanted to be an engineer, so I'm glad I made the switch. It's a lot easier program to go through.
Oh, yeah. So what are your long-term goals for your career? You know, do you want to work for a newspaper or maybe a place like Cyclone, you know, Fanatic?
Yeah, I get asked that a lot, and I think I have joy in just about all the, you know, I mean, you've seen me covering racing, arena football, different sports all over the place, and I think I have so much joy in covering all of them that I could care less where I go, just as long as I'm having fun doing it.
All right. Well, I know you were also at the Iowa State versus UNI game on Saturday. I didn't get to see any of that because I was out of town at a wedding. I wanted to get your thoughts on that. You know, should Cyclone Nation be panicking at this point, or is it too early for that?
Man, absolutely not. I think and I think when you look at high school football teams, like you look at those two Ankeny teams that played Friday, at the end of the season, they're going to look a whole lot different. And from game one to game two, you look a whole lot different. We had all our coaches, when I was playing at Valley, all of them preached that your biggest improvement is from game one to game two, and I'm sure you've heard that from millions of other people. So I don't think Iowa State should panic. The defense looked really good, and you get out of it with a win. An overtime win counts the same as a regular win. You know, it's not – you don't have hockey scoring where you get a point for an overtime loss or anything. So
right. Well, it sounds like Iowa State's offensive line wasn't very impressive, and that's a particular interest to me, of course, because of Colin Olsen. You know, so did they get shoved around a little bit by the Panthers?
Just a little bit. I think their pass blocking was, you know, a little shaky. But at the same time, Purdy only ran the ball twice. You know, if you have that protection there and you're blocking long enough for him to at least throw the ball, I think that's good in what you want out of a first game. I think it's a little shaky line in terms of the players there right now and, of course, potential injuries that could come. But I do think they know what they're doing, and there's enough experience under there to get that wrapped up.
All right, listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Iowa Realty. Gershman Mortgage is also a sponsor of the podcast. Whether you're looking for your first home or refinancing your existing loan, Gershman Mortgage has an expert to assist you. They help you find the right mortgage to meet your personal needs. When you are buying your starter house, moving to a larger home, aging in place, or looking to refinance, Gershman Mortgage will be there every step of the way. You can visit their Ankeny office, call 515-964-5952, or visit gershman.com to get pre-approved today. Well, we're visiting with Ankeny Fanatics' newest member of our team, Connor Ferguson. So let's talk some high school football now. You covered Friday night's Jag-Hawk Bowl from Ankeny's perspective, and we also had you write a season preview on the Hawks, so you're probably a little more familiar with Ankeny than Centennial right now. But in general, you know, what were your thoughts on the game?
You know, Ankeny, talking to Coach Nelson on Wednesday and watching some of their practice, it was like a first-week practice. There's still a lot of things they needed to clean up, but in terms of what to see from, you know, the first practice you see into the first game, I thought they came out just as well as you'd expect them to. They had Centennial right on the ropes. There's a couple plays in the second half where if you don't see a bonehead penalty, then that completely stops the Centennial drive, or they can keep driving down the field. I think with an overtime loss, you know, if you're going to lose in overtime, that's, you know, it's not a moral victory, but it's better than getting beat out by 20 You have the last couple of seasons. So I think that's a plus for them, and they got a couple of playmakers. Brody Brecht was certainly impressive too.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about him here in a minute. Of course, this was your first taste of the Jag-Hawk rivalry, I imagine. It was pretty intense, wasn't it?
I covered one before for KXNO, but I thought it was really intense. I'll say it's probably one of the best rivalries in the state. I'm sure you know which one I think might be a little better.
Yeah.
I got to poke some fun in here, right?
Yeah, no, I got you. Well, when I was walking out of the stadium afterwards, I heard a fan make the comment that the best team didn't win the game, and I think that remains to be seen, but these two teams were certainly evenly matched. The Centennial Stat Crew guys, and I got to give a shout-out to Rod Brannon and Rick Dobish, told me that both teams had 226 total yards. So it doesn't get much more even than that, does it?
It doesn't, and that game was really even. I don't think you can walk out and just say, like, the best team didn't win that game, because I think both teams were right there. That Centennial defense is insane. The fact that Ankeny got the plays on them that they did was crazy. That's a first week thing too, that first Brody Breck touchdown when have one-on-one coverage with a small undersized safety. I think that's absolutely just a little breakdown, and it went for 84 yards. So you got to watch out for that early in the season especially, and I think that's what kind of made the difference.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if Ankeny had the better team or not, but the Hawks probably had the best player on the field. You mentioned Brody Brecht. He caught five passes for 152 yards, including that 84-yard catch and run for the touchdown. And that ended a long scoring drought for the Hawks against Centennial because they'd been shut out, you know, the two previous years. And that was pretty much the only big offensive play of the first half. But I'm sure you can see why Brecht is becoming such a hot prospect in that class of 2021.
Absolutely. He was all over the field. I mean, if they were throwing the ball, it was likely going to be to Brody. And I think that's going to be part of what can make their offense a little bit better is if they can get teams to sink into Brody and throw it to someone else. Cade Somers touchdown. Is it Somers?
Somers. Uh-huh, yeah.
That was all – Brecht went out on the right side, and I think the quarterback looked to him first. He was triple covered. Mm-hmm. And so they threw it to my sideline at the time, and Somers caught it, and I saw it coming from a mile away. If you can get people to sync up on your best receiver, you're going to have your other three open. So I
for
think
sure.
that'll be a big thing for them.
Well, we've had Brody on the podcast a couple of times this year, and we've actually talked more baseball than football with him. because he's also got some D1 offers for baseball. So it's going to be interesting to see which sport he eventually chooses. You know, if you were in his shoes, which sport would you want to play?
Hockey.
Hockey.
Can I say that? Can I pick the third option? Man, it's I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know what his brain wants him to pick. And some people will tell you go to football because there's more money in it. I'm a big proponent of whatever you're doing and whatever you're doing for work, you should enjoy it unless you really like money. So I don't know. That's probably how I'd look at it is which one you have more fun doing. Just go and play that and be the best you can be. Well, playing two sports in high school certainly doesn't hurt.
Right, right. Well, he does have offers from Iowa for both sports, and they've talked to him about possibly doing both. So he could go that route.
Just carpool with Connor McCaffrey everywhere.
There you go. Well, Centennial tied the game on the opening drive of the third quarter, you know, and you mentioned the penalty that the Hawks had there because they appeared to get a stop on third down, which may have forced the Jags into a punt or a long field goal attempt, you know, but that personal foul penalty was really, you know, a killer because then Avery Gates scored the tying touchdown three plays later. So that really was a big play, wasn't it?
And, yeah, and that's part of playing a rivalry in your first week because I know this used to be a late season game, right?
Well, later in the preseason, yeah. I mean, like the third or fourth game
yeah.
sometimes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you had those – personal fouls on both teams of just after the whistle hit or celebrating too much. And, you know, it happens. You got to find a way to not do it or contain yourself and get to the sideline because these guys are just going to throw flags. It's high school football. So any little thing you do just ruins a drive. And that's what happened on that one. Of course, Centennial capitalizes. It goes all the way down the field. And it happened a lot in the first half, but neither team capitalized when they got a free play or a free set of downs mm-hmm. from a penalty. So I said on KXNO at halftime, I was like, hey, first team to capitalize on this is going to get momentum and potentially win this game. And I didn't think it would happen the way they did, but Centennial eventually went on to win.
Right, right. Well, you mentioned the touchdown by Summers. That gave the Hawks a 14-7 lead late in the third quarter. And then Centennial eventually forced overtime with a 73-yard scoring drive in the fourth quarter. And the Jaguars were sparked on that drive by backup quarterback Keaton Gray, who ran six times for 37 yards on the drive, including a one-yard sneak for the touchdown. You know, Centennial probably doesn't win that game without him, do they?
No, and that when their starter went down, you know, if you have a backup that you can put in and be as much of a stud as Gray was in that situation, that's amazing to have for them, and that's going to pay dividends, I'm sure, for the rest of the season and definitely – that definitely opened up his playing time as well. I know they didn't throw the ball much with him. They kind of designed it around a running system, and it worked to perfection. You know, Ankeny didn't know how to stop him, and they piled up in the end zone, and he emerged on the other side to score the tying one.
Exactly. Now, after Centennial stopped Ankeny's ensuing drive and forced a punt, the Jaguars took over at midfield with 20 seconds left. Were you surprised that they didn't, you know, try to make a play there and get into field goal range?
Absolutely. I think when coaches have, you know, 30 seconds to do it and you don't throw it, throw a deep arm punt at the worst. You know, throw it so you have three receivers in the same spot of the field if you're worried about that. Or you're single out Brecht and try to hit them deep and try to get them to one-on-one coverage again. I think you should absolutely try to go for that. But I'm not a coach, so
yeah.
I can't.
Well, they ended up winning the game, so they must have known what they were doing. So, well, then in overtime, you know, neither team was able to move the ball. Ankeny had a chance to take the lead, but the Hawks botched their field goal attempt. And then Centennial's Connor Page booted the game winner from 34 yards out. And I know you did a radio interview with Connor afterwards. You know, that was a pretty cool moment for that kid, wasn't it?
That was insane. We got off the phone, and he ended up getting rushed by the 200 students waiting on the field for me to do an interview with him. So I felt kind of selfish there. But that was his first game.
Right.
So he's a soccer player that just didn't have that much fun playing soccer as a junior and went out for football this year. Pretty good game to have, I guess, if you're going to have a debut like that. And he was out, you know, he didn't flutter in the spotlight or anything, just straight through the uprights.
Well, you mentioned working for KXNO. So have you been doing those radio spots for a couple years for them?
Yeah, I've been doing it. I think this is my fourth season. I had to try to count going into the year for a bio thing I wrote, and I miscounted like three times and couldn't figure it out. But, yeah, it's my fourth season there, and used to travel around to a ton of different schools, so it's nice to kind of settle down with two and be able to study two teams throughout the year and then look at who they're playing. So,
well, we're glad to have you. It's going to make my job a little easier, I think. So well, let's look ahead to week two and the rest of the season. You'll be covering Ankeny versus Johnston on Friday while I'm headed to Urbandale to watch the Jaguars. And just so people know, we'll be alternating some assignments this fall. I'm planning to go to Ankeny's game at Cedar Falls the next week while Connor will stay here in Ankeny for the Centennial versus Waterloo West game. anyway, I know Coach Nelson told you after Friday's game that beating Centennial was not the pinnacle for his team. So do you think the Hawks can bounce back, you know, against a pretty good Johnston team?
Absolutely. I think if you come out and play that hard again, it's definitely easy to bounce back. I know there's – you always look at after a tough rivalry loss if that's going to sting through the next week. I think with that being week one, there's a lot of season left. And I think if they come out intense like that and play the same game, move the ball around a little bit more, you know, just look at more attempts to pass the ball and try to get those other receivers in there with Brody also, I think they'll have a lot of success.
Well, last year they almost beat Johnston, and of course, you know, this year's team I think is looking better already. So yeah, I definitely think I give them a shot. And last year, Ankeny was able to overcome an 0-3 start to still make the playoffs. But the Hawks obviously don't want to go down, you know, that road again. How important do you think it is for Ankeny to win, you know, at least one of these next two games?
You want to get there so that you don't have to dig out of that hole. You know, you go 0-3 to start the year. There's guys on that team that don't know if they're going to be able to keep going and keep winning games. So I think to avoid 0-2, 0-3, stuff like that is definitely something you want to do to get your team in the playoffs this year. If you go in on the back end of that RPI scale, you're going to get a better team in that first round. And we've seen that usually makes a difference unless you're Southeast Polk. So.
Right. Yeah, because last year, of course, Ankeny had to play Valley in the first round, even though they had a great effort and came up short. You know, that was a tough loss for them.
And I think you have to let that sit in the back of your mind when you're preparing for this season. You can't delve on it. You got to use it to get better and kind of have that in your sights and say you want to be in the position Valley was, where you're playing a team smaller than you and you want to make sure you don't get upset rather than try to be the kids upsetting the other team.
Sure. Now, even though Centennial came out on top, you know, against the crosstown rival, I almost think there are more questions about the Jaguars heading into week two than the Hawks. For one thing, Centennial got a little beat up on Friday as both Gates and quarterback Hayes Gibson suffered injuries. Gates told me after the game that the trainer thought it was a high ankle sprain, you know, but even that can be a tough injury to come back from. I also think it's going to be interesting to see how the quarterback situation shakes out. Gray told me after the game that it's still Hayes' team, that he's going to lead the Jaguars to a great season. You know, but Gray clearly provided some things, you know, for the Jaguars that they needed at the time. So it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out, isn't it?
I think, for one, if there wasn't a quarterback conversation you were having before the season started, then you should at least have one now. So definitely give Gray a look and look at playing both quarterbacks at times. What are we to think of his injury, too, the starter's injury? I mean, if that's worse than you thought, if he tweaks it at all, you got to have Gray ready. So I think definitely now you're not going to see it because we're not watching practice, but you're going to look at Centennial, and they better be practicing with both quarterbacks just in case. So definitely something to look for in the quarterbacks there, and I'm sure their defense will stay stellar as they are.
Well, I know they had four quarterbacks in the preseason that were fighting for the job, so they've got, you know, multiple guys that could maybe – take that spot if necessary, but they certainly have two that are pretty good. What about you? But I have a feeling if there's a good chance, you know, if these two teams, you know, could see each other again down the road, you know, if Centennial can stay healthy, I think the Jaguars are a legitimate, you know, top five team. I think the Hawks are a top 10 team. You know, depending on how those seeds shake out, you know, I could see these teams, you know, having a matchup in the quarterfinals, like a 3-6 game or a 2-7 game. That'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and we've seen it in past years. You don't know how these guys are going to get seeded at the end of the year. You don't know who's going to be the number one, what teams are going to play into it. If Ankeny ends up going 8 and Centennial goes 1 or 2-7, 3-6, something like that, as long as they're close to that realm of being in a matchup spot, even 4-5 for both of them. But we've seen the state switch up how they seed the teams, how it's not like a straight bracket. You know, you don't have your – here's the top 10 rankings. Those are the top 10 seeds. We'll fill in the rest. You don't have that at all with this. So I think there's definitely a chance they can match up, and boy, would it be cool to see them face off in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think a lot of people here in Ankeny would enjoy seeing that rematch. Well, Connor, thanks for coming tonight. I appreciate it, and it's nice to have you on the Ankeny Fanatic team. Looking forward to working with you the rest of the year.
Cool. Thanks for having me, guys.
You bet. All right, you've been listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Iowa Realty. Iowa Realty is very proud and fortunate to have Home Services Lending, Iowa Title, Midland Title and Escrow, and Home Services Insurance as part of their one-stop shopping model. They're able to help you buy and sell anywhere in the state of Iowa. They can also help you, your family, and friends who are moving from anywhere to anywhere in the world through their business affiliates. If you would like information on how to become a realtor, you can call Mike Stanbro at 453-5350, or you can email Mike at mikestanbro, that's S-T-A-N-B-R-O-U-G-H, at iowarealty.com. Come back next week for another edition of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. We're going to have a special Cy Hawk edition of the podcast. We'll see you then.